Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 122 event, which takes place in Shanghai, China. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 1.15 units for UFC Fight Night 121 after going 2-1 on our premium bets. We also lost our 1-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 122 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired in its entirety on UFC Fight Pass this Saturday morning. Let's dive right in. Now kicking things off on Fight Pass is a heavyweight contest between Cyril Asker, who is 8-3, and Hu Yaozong, who is 3-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Asker minus 245, the comeback on Hu at plus 175. Right now, looking over at 5dimes.eu, our official sponsored sportsbook for the Premium Oddscast, 5dimes has Asker minus 260, the comeback on Hu, plus 220. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Maybe some parlays getting thrown in at Asker a little bit, but nothing too crazy in this fight. And I mean, how could there be really if you think about it? I mean, Asker, I think he's a pretty solid heavyweight, but I mean, he's on the brink of being UFC level. Of course, a lot of us know that. So he's probably right now is where he stands. One of the weaker, you know, slots on the UFC roster. Let's be honest. Then Hugh making his UFC debut. He's stepping in on short notice as well. So you basically have some lower tier heavyweights going out of here. But again, I don't want to disrespect Asker that much because the guy does have, you know, some well-rounded skill overall. He does. I mean, he's got a little bit of power on his feet. He's got some wrestling. He's got some submissions. It's just unfortunately for him, you know, he's started off his UFC career on a losing note. I mean, he lost to Cannonieri, got destroyed there, and then he got a win in between against Smolyakov. And then, of course, he got destroyed by that brutal ground and pound from Harris in his last matchup. So he's better than that, though. And I think Hugh here against, you know, Asker is a different matchup completely. It's not like Hugh's going to get Asker down and just start dropping some bombs and vicious ground and pound like Harris did to him. So this is a much winnable, a more winnable fight for Asker. Hugh, I guess getting into him a little bit first. I mean, he's coming in on super short notice, by the way. He's a young heavyweight. He's still very raw. And in the cage, it really should show here. I mean, this weekend against Asker on the feet, he does have some power. I mean, that's what highlights his overall game, I think. But he's not very aggressive. He kind of waits and is a little bit too patient. He will flurry to finish once he thinks that he has you hurt. I mean, that's one thing. So he does have a little bit of killer instinct. I was impressed by that. And he really does have a decent high kick as well. I mean, sometimes he's a little bit unorthodoxy. I mean, you don't expect it to come and to come. So I think that's his path to victory here against Asker is maybe landing that high kick. Outside of that, though, I think Asker is going to have some speed on him. I mean, this is just too big of a step up for Hugh. I mean, with Asker's speed and power and his wrestling ability, I think he's probably going to be able to land and do some damage on the feet against Hugh. And if not, he might be able to take this fight to the ground. And on the ground, he should have his way with Hugh as well. So I know, again, Asker hasn't looked that great so far in the UFC, but I mean, stylistically, this should be a favorable matchup for him. He is going to be a little bit shorter than Hugh. And again, he has to watch out for Hugh's offense on the feet a little bit. But outside of that, I mean, Asker, again, with his speed, with his power, and with his overall MMA game that's ahead of Hugh's, he shouldn't have an issue here. So my pick is Asker to win.
Asker is definitely the more well-rounded of the two fighters here. Yaozong is actually, he spent like the last couple weeks training at Jackson's MMA, but I mean, he was such a neophyte to MMA and becoming a really good, well-rounded fighter. There's only so much you can learn in that short amount of time. So I doubt that they could have instilled like everything that they could teach in a week or two. And Yaozong, like, he's more just like a block of clay that they need to mold. And they were only able to like let that thing spin like a couple turns. So against Asker, I mean, Yaozong has power, as Nick mentioned, but unless he just clocks Asker, I just don't see this happening. I expect Asker to close the distance, maybe drag him to the ground. Asker had a lot of success from top position against Smolyakov. And honestly, Asker, even though he's not a great striker, he might be able to hold his own with Yao Zhang on the feet. But why play with fire? Why risk it? Asker doesn't have the best chin or durability in general. So if he can just take Yao Zhang down and beat him up from top position, I think that's clearly his best path to victory. So him being the more experienced seasoned fighter against somebody in Yao Zhang who has not faced anybody even close to decent so far in his MMA career, I definitely favor Asker here. I mean, I don't think Asker's that great of a fighter, but he's clearly the better than Yao Zhang at this point. And Yao Zhang could become decent, but this is just way too early, way too short notice, and I don't expect much from Yao Zhang unless, like, a miracle happens and he lands a haymaker. So my pick is going to be Asker as well. Now, moving down to the featherweight division, we have Wuliji Buren, who is 10-4, taking on Rolando D., who is 8-6-1 with a 1-0 contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in D minus 170, the comeback on Buren at plus 130. Right now we're five times. D minus 160, the comeback on Buren plus 140. So another spot where line margins have tightened up. Two-way action is coming into this fight. Nothing crazy. I mean, I think the bettors out there and just the MMA community in general probably are not too sold on D at this point. I mean, he's 0-2 in the UFC. I, for one, am a little bit. I mean, I'm not that I'm sold on him, but I believe in his skill set a little bit more than I think most people do. Obviously, I opened D the favorite here, and he's taking this fight on shorter notice. And despite that, I'm still making him the favorite, even with his 0-2 record. I mean, I think D does have some complete skill in his game. I think he does have some pretty decent power on the feet. He's got some skill on the feet as well. He's not the fastest guy. I mean, I would like to see him be a little bit tighter with his defense and have a little bit more speed on stuff. But, I mean, the guy does – throw. He's got accuracy. He's got a little bit of power as well. He's got a good ground game and good ground awareness overall as well. I think his wrestling's not bad. It's underrated. I think his submission defense is overall pretty decent as well. And, I mean, he could get top position and pretty much, I mean, depending on who he faces opponent wise in the UFC, he's going to have an advantage in some areas. And I think he does over Buren as well. In fact, I think he's just more of the complete and, I mean, you know, basically, more of the defined fighter right now. Buren's still, I think, overall fine-tuning his game, and he's a step behind D at this point, at this stage of his career. And, I mean, Buren is actually a year older, too, so that says something. But I think the level of competition from D has been a little bit better, and that's why he's a little bit more advanced. I think Buren's not bad. I mean, he's a decent fighter against weak competition is basically what it comes down to. Because if you look at his resume, that's exactly what you're getting with Buren. I mean, and watching footage on him, the guy does have a little bit of skill. He's got some speed on the feet. He is a little bit tentative at times, a little bit too much. But he's got some clean technique. He's not really a sloppy fighter all that much. But again, he's one of these guys that waits a little bit too much. You want him to put his foot on the gas a little bit more, being more aggressive, I would like to see. And he does also look for some takedowns. Especially when his opponent's aggression picks up. I mean, that's when you can see Buren kind of shooting in and looking for the takedowns a little bit more. So overall, you know, like I said, I like what I see with Buren, but he's, again, one of these guys that's not going to blow you away on the feet. He's not going to blow you away with his ground game, and he's not going to blow you away with his aggression either. So I think here what we're going to see is probably a pretty competitive fight, but I think D, again, will have the advantage. If it stays standing, I think D's going to land the cleaner blows. If it goes on the ground, I think D has a bigger edge there as well. So it's hard not to like D in this spot. I think he is going to win despite the short notice, and I know people could throw in there that D kind of retired recently. The UFC cut him from the roster, and he basically said to himself, hey, if I'm not going to fight in the UFC, I don't want to fight anymore. But of course, the slot opened up for him to step in on short notice, so UFC brought him back. And this is basically do or die for D. I mean, if he wins this fight, obviously his UFC career probably continues. If he loses this fight, I mean, unless the UFC is going to give him another shot because he's taking this fight on short notice, he's probably done. So must-win fight for D. I think he gets the job done here, and I kind of hope he does. Like I said, I think he's better than most people think, and hopefully he shows up and shows it here.
And I feel similarly. Wuliji Buren is decently well-rounded, but my main issue with him is he's inactive. And if D gets going on the feet, I could just see Buren getting overwhelmed. D isn't the greatest fighter, you know, as evidenced by the starching he kind of took from Alex Caceres in his UFC debut, which was short notice. But I thought he looked half decent against Ishihara. That was a competitive fight. It could have gone either way. D clearly showed that he belongs, at least on the feet, against most mid-level and lower UFC featherweights. Now, is Wuliji Buren mid-level or lower UFC featherweight? Absolutely not. The only way I see Buren winning this fight is getting this fight to the floor, pushing D against the fence, like slowing it down a little bit, because D has a decent stand-up pace. He's got some high volume if you let him open up, and he's got a little bit of pop in his hands. Now, Buren isn't a terrible striker, but for the most part, he's a guy that sits back and kind of reacts. And I think that that's a bad situation here where D's going to be aggressive in his face, landing some strikes, trying to knock him out, trying to at least do more than enough to sway the judges to get him, allowed him to win rounds. And unless Buren gets this fight to the floor or gets top position, I don't really see him winning. So, and I just don't really trust his takedowns here. So I like D. I think, he's not the best fighter, but, neither is Buren. And I think D probably just gets a decision here or maybe even a knockout. Now, dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Wu Yanin, who is 9-1, taking on Gina Mazzani, who is 4-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Mazzani -245, the comeback on Wu at +175. Right now looking over five dimes, big drop in dog price. Everybody coming in on Wu. I mean, they love that skill set. Right now, Mazzani's -150, the comeback on Wu, +130. And I'm being sarcastic a little bit because, man, am I disappointed. Studying and doing research on this card from top to bottom, not just Wu, has been disappointing because we have a lot of fighters from this region that just have fought terrible competition. I mean, obviously you got to take baby steps as a fighter. I mean, I understand it's important, especially as you're first getting into things, and you got to fight people with, not so great resumes. But when you're 6, 7, 8 fights in to your career, and you're still fighting cans, I mean, I think it's time to take a step up, especially if you're destroying those. And that's exactly what Wu is doing. And she's not the only one, like I said, on this card. So that's what bothers me with Wu. I mean, if you look at the level of competition that she's faced, it's horrific. It's terrible. And she's looked good in some of those fights because, I mean, she's just destroying cans. So she's an aggressive fighter. I mean, she's primarily a striking based fighter. She pushes forward, but this is a big step up. I mean, outside of her skill set, that's again, I mean, she's just going out there and destroying girls that she should be able to destroy. I'm not confident in her skill at all, especially a big step up against Mazzani here. And a lot of people obviously do not think Mazzani is a good fighter at all. If you watch her fight from the Ultimate Fighter 18 season, she got beat up pretty good by Pena. But that's Jessica Pena, man. I mean, Pena is no slouch. And, Pena was able to do what she does best, get her on the ground and control her a little bit. She beat her by decision. Then Sarah McMahon, of course, destroyed Mazzani in her official UFC debut. So I think people thinking she's garbage. But the truth is, Mazzani does have some game. I mean, I wish her stand-up would be a little bit better. Obviously, like, when a fighter is aggressive with her at times, Mazzani does tend to back up a little bit and kind of shell up. Not all that much, but, I mean, you could see some of that aspect in her game. But outside of that, I mean, she really is a pretty decent grappler. I mean, I think she has underrated wrestling. She's able to get the fights down to the floor more times than not. And once on the ground, I think she can definitely go to work. She's got a little bit of sub skill to go along with some good top control and some good ground to pound as well. And what I like about Mazzani the most is that she trains out of Extreme Couture, works really hard. I mean, she has, I believe she's still managed by Misha Tate. So she has a lot of good influence around her. And she's, in the gym with a lot of talented individuals on a daily basis that she gets to train with. So, I mean, her background and who she's going to war with every day is going to be better than what she's facing here in the cage. So I do think that even if early on Wu comes out aggressive and Mazzani looks like she's, losing or not looking too great, I think Mazzani eventually turns the tide, gets a takedown, and goes to work either on the ground or, again, Mazzani might be okay on the feet at some time because, again, Wu has never been tested. So that's my problem here. I mean, I'm personally, planning on fading Wu. At this price right now, I think it is still some value, -150 or so, with Mazzani, because like I said, I opened it over 2-1 for her as well. And I know that's crazy because, I mean, you wouldn't typically see Mazzani that big of a favorite, but that's how much I was not impressed by Wu at that time too. So we'll see what she does here, because a lot of times you do got to be a little careful, because the film study won't tell the whole story. When some of these debuting fighters get into the UFC, they actually look a little bit better than they did on film, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case here. But Zaney definitely has a path to victory. She's got some confidence going into this fight, and I think she gets it done. So my pick is Mae Zaney, and I think, again, at this price, despite everybody else disagreeing, and I'm sure some of you that already have got in on the dog Wu here already at the time of recording is going to be disappointed that I'm saying that, but I think you guys are wrong. I think Mae Zaney does step up and get the W here. So my pick is Mae Zaney.
Now, I agree with almost everything you said, except for the fact that Mae Zaney is going to have confidence here. I mean, she has zero momentum. I mean, she got embarrassed in her UFC debut. Granted, it was short notice. She knew what she was getting herself into. But, I mean, she got absolutely destroyed by Sarah McMahon. That fight was not even close, and she was not in it for even half a second. So, I mean, it was a huge mismatch. So, she clearly does not belong with anybody even close to the top 15 in the division, I would think. But that being said, neither does her opponent. Wu Yanan is not a very good fighter. She is 9-1, and I think of her 9 wins, I think her opponents combined have like 1 win. I mean, it is bad. It's real bad. And the one time that Yanan got tested against the current Invicta champ, she got smashed on the ground. So the way I see this fight playing out is it's just going to boil down to if Yanan can be put on her back. And if she can, then I think Mae Zaney steamrolls her. Even though Mae Zaney has not been good and looked terrible in her UFC debut, at least she's in the right environment and improving and getting tested daily. Like, Yanan is not getting tested, and I do not think that she is going to handle adversity well. So I see this fight playing out. I think Yanan will be competitive on the feet. I think Yanan might even get the better of Mae Zaney on the feet, but the second this enters the clinch, and women's fights enter the clinch a lot, very often, and I think the second Mae Zaney closes the distance, I think she should be able to drag Yanan to the ground. And even though Mae Zaney isn't great on the ground and clearly got dominated by McMahon on the ground, this is a completely different story, because Yanan is, to me, very, very, very low skill level in terms of the ground game. So I think Mae Zaney can steamroll her on the canvas. I think she can get top positioned, advanced to mount, and then either get a finish from strikes or a finish from submission. But on the feet, I think it could be competitive. But I just don't think it stays on the feet that long. So my pick is also going to be Gina Mae Zaney. Now, moving back up to the heavyweight division, we have Chase Sherman, who is 11-3, taking on Shamil Abdurakhimov, who is 17-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in this fight, exactly a pick, minus 120 either way. So Abdurakhimov minus 120, Sherman minus 120. Right now, over five dimes, it's Abdurakhimov, actually, minus 135. The comeback on Sherman, plus 115. So a little bit more action coming in Abdurakhimov's way. I'm not really surprised by that. I mean, technically speaking, and I mean, what he's faced so far in the UFC, I mean, Abdurakhimov is just a little bit of a better fighter. And I'm saying a little bit because Sherman has come on as of late. I know the level of competition hasn't really been the same, but you see some confidence growing. I mean, even on social media, Sherman's picked up a quite a big fan base, and that has nothing to do with the actual fight itself here. But I'm saying, mentally speaking, Sherman is believing in himself a whole lot more, especially coming off of two impressive back-to-back wins. Now, again, that is against lesser competition in Grabowski and Coulter, but I mean, you know, again, sometimes you do have to get some confidence under your belt, and you can't perform better than what people are expecting. And here, this is going to be a test. I think it's going to be really close, especially if it stays standing. Again, I think Abdurakhimov is just the better overall fighter. He's the better mixed martial artist. I think he's a little bit slicker on the feet. I think he's a little bit of the better ground player as well. But that being said, I think here it all comes down to if Sherman can keep this fight upright and stay off his back and makes this a standing battle, I think it's going to be close, because Sherman, I think, is going to kind of have his foot on the gas a little bit more so than Abdurakhimov. And I think Sherman mixes stuff up well enough that his aggression and a little bit of power to go along with it. I mean, he does have some decent leg kicks as well. I mean, he throws some decent stuff on the feet. I mean, regardless of what people think of Sherman, especially after his couple, losses back to back in the UFC early on, I think a lot of people are just writing him off and kind of throwing him away. But I mean, he's proved that he is definitely worthy of being in this UFC heavyweight division. Again, we've said it time and time again, the roster for the heavyweight division typically is a little bit weaker. So you're not going to get the best level of competition, even in the UFC. But here, I mean, Sherman does definitely belong. Obviously, Abdurakhimov is one of the guys that should be on the upper tier of the heavyweights as well. So at a pick'em price, I know it's crazy, but to me, this is almost a trap fight. This is almost one of those weird spots, UFC matchmaking here that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I figured they would give Sherman an easier opponent. So they get him kind of, you know, keep his confidence going. Again, he's becoming more of a public guy that, you know, people get behind and kind of like his social media aspect and stuff like that. So I figure the UFC would give him a push in that regard, but no, they're kind of feeding him to the wolves here with Abdurakhimov. But it's a fight that he could possibly win. It will be competitive. Again, it all depends, I think, of how this fight plays out and what kind of game plan Abdurakhimov has. So that being said, it's hard not to pick the better fighter here and Abdurakhimov, so I'm going to go his way, but I'm not confident at all in this spot. I think it truly is a pick'em type of fight with a slight lean maybe towards Abdurakhimov, so I'm going to pick him to win, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if Sherman comes out with the W here.
And honestly, I would be surprised if Sherman got the W here. Yes, Sherman has looked better in his recent fights, but you got to remember who he's been fighting. He faced Rashad Coulter and Damian Grabowski back-to-back, two guys that have never won in the UFC. And in fact, have got destroyed by everyone they've ever faced. In fact, I think Grabowski going to decision was the first time he didn't get smashed, and get finished. So in the UFC. So I think it's actually not that impressive how Sherman has looked recently. You know, he even got rocked, against Coulter, when Coulter just recently in his second fight got absolutely obliterated by, Tuivasa. So I think it's actually misleading that Chase Sherman is on a two-fight win streak in the heavyweight division. Shamil Abdurakhimov, at least, when he's gone in there, he's been in there against some top guys in the UFC heavyweight division, and he's been competitive. I mean, he had a solid showing against Anthony Hamilton. He had a solid showing against Walt Harris, picking up a decision, a guy that Chase Sherman got completely KTFO'd by. And then, you know, Abdurakhimov was winning the first round against Timothy Johnson before he got taken down. And then he was winning a 5-round main event against Derek Lewis before he kind of slowed down from holding him against the fence for 4 rounds. Now, Abdurakhimov is not nearly as exciting as Chase Sherman. I'll gladly admit that. But I think he's more effective in terms of ability to win fights against tougher competition. I think Chase Sherman gets knocked out by a lot of guys that Abdurakhimov would be able to go to decision or grind things out against and maybe win. So the biggest thing that Abdurakhimov really has to be careful about in this fight for me is the leg kicks. I think Chase Sherman has some underrated leg kicks. He can land very heavy. He can finish fights with them if he can connect with enough of them. I mean, you saw that with the Coulter fight. I mean, he really tore Coulter's legs up. And if Abdurakhimov is staying too far on the outside and not checking those, they can definitely add up. Now, other than that, I mean, Sherman has some power, but I think Abdurakhimov can hang with him in the stand-up, just punch for punch. But then where Abdurakhimov really, you know, butters his bread is getting fighters pressed into the fence, looking for takedowns, just looking to mix things up a little bit more. Abdurakhimov isn't the most effective wrestler, as evidenced by his inability to take Derek Lewis down, but he can be annoying, and he can get inside position against the fence, and that wins round. It's not the most entertaining, it's not the most exciting, but this guy is capable of winning rounds, and I think that he can be annoyingly effective against Chase Sherman as well, just by being kind of the bully in this fight in terms of, cage positioning, octagon control, dirty boxing, clinch fighting, potentially getting some takedowns. We really haven't seen Chase Sherman tested in his ground game. Pretty much everybody he's fought so far has wanted to keep it standing. So if Abdurakhimov is looking to mix things up and get the fight to the floor, that could be to his advantage for sure. Because we haven't really seen Chase Sherman off of his back yet, and I don't really know how good he is on the canvas. So I like Abdurakhimov. I just think he's the more well-rounded guy. He just has to be careful not to eat too many leg kicks and just be wary of Sherman's power. But other than that, Abdurakhimov should win this fight. Now, dropping back down to the featherweight division, we have Song Yadong, who is 9-3 with 2 no contests, taking on Bharat Khander, who is 5-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Khander -155, the comeback on Song at +115. Right now, looking over 5 times, Song is -135, Khander is +115, so line flipped to my surprise a little bit. Not, I mean, it's hard because how do we know exactly who the betting public is going to come in on a card like this? I mean, it's crazy. Like I said, most of these guys have watered down records. Not a lot of skill, not a lot of talent. I mean, I think personally, some of these guys wouldn't even survive on a Access TV card on a Friday night. I mean, whether it's, you know, LFA or whatnot, some of these guys wouldn't even win a strap in an organization like that or even maybe get into that spot. So this is kind of a watered down card. And Khander here, I'm just not sure. I mean, again, I don't have a lot of confidence in his game. I mean, getting into his background, I guess a little bit, he's a wrestling based fighter. He's strong, especially for the bantamweight division. He's fought at featherweight as well, though, but I mean, I think he's better suited for the featherweight or for the bantamweight division, especially with his strength and his basically his style of fighting, which is to grab you, slam you on the ground and, you know, try to control you and, drop some ground and pound along the way and look for submissions. So he goes after takedowns often, sets most of them up with the striking, but he's a bit wild on the feet and sloppy at times as well. So, I mean, you could definitely take advantage of his mistakes and his aggression. And it's just one of those things that, I mean, if he doesn't get top position on the ground and drop some ground and pound, he could probably be in some trouble if you're able to keep him upright. So I think Song here, that's where his advantage is going to come into play. Now, of course, Song is coming in on short notice as a replacement, but he is a fun fighter to watch. I mean, and typically speaking, he seems to have decent cardio. I mean, as far as fun fighters go, I think he's like a little spark plug. He has so much energy, Song does, typically speaking. I mean, he just brings it in every fight. So he's quick. He's got a little bit of power to go along with it and has pretty much his skill in all, you know, in all areas of the game as well. So he is a well-rounded fighter that, of course, could improve, but I do like his striking. I mean, he does mix things up while standing, and a lot of it has to do with the speed. He closes the gap really fast, landing some decent strikes. And, you know, he does still have some improvement to grow on. I mean, he's only 22 years old, so he's going to get better. But from what I've seen, he definitely has some potential. On the ground, he showed pretty good IQ as well. I mean, he's got the ability to scramble, and he's got decent ground awareness overall. And then as far as his takedowns go, he does have a pretty quick and fast shot as well that is he's able to get the fights to the ground. Now, his takedown defense does need some more work. I mean, he can get put on his back. And against Khander here, I mean, I think that that's what's going to come into play. I think Khander obviously is going to be the one that looking to take this fight to the ground, and Song is probably going to end up falling in that trap. But the thing that impressed me about Song is typically, again, speaking, when he's on the ground and he's on his back, he can scramble out pretty decent and get top position. He's done it more than, you know, against more than one opponent. So I think that's what Khander has to be careful about. If Song's able to scramble and get top position on him, he's in some serious trouble. So I think MMA-wise, I mean, the more talented fighter of the two is definitely Song. So I do agree with your reaction that came in that way. I'm surprised because, again, on short notice and stylistically speaking, if you watch Song and he gets put on his back and you got a guy like Khander that can take him down, you know, and do that sort of thing, I would think that they would come in the other way. But I think the early action is justified here. And I am going to pick Song to win this fight because I do think even though he probably ends up in some problematic spots early on, I think, you know, as the fight progresses, he's going to get in better position and he's going to be the one doing the damage along the way. So I just trust Song a little bit better than I do Khander at this point. But we'll see. Again, they're both raw. They're both developing, of course, as well. But I just don't like what I see in Khander's stand-up game, and he's going to have to win this fight underground to win it. And I'm not sure he could do that against a guy like Song. So all that said, I'm going to pick Song. Again, how could you have a lot of confidence, you know, in a fight like this, in a situation, especially since Song is stepping in on short notice. But I do think he's a better fighter, so I'm going to pick him to win.
Styles can make fights, and while I do think Song is the more well-rounded fighter of the two, that doesn't mean I think he'll win. Khander does have the better wrestling, and Song's biggest weakness is his takedown defense. I think this guy gets put on his back too easily. He can be overpowered on the ground. And while Song does have a better submission game and the better striking, I don't think Condair is easily submitted. Like, the way he can lose is if guys can avoid the takedown and just beat him on the feet. Condair's striking is rudimentary at best. As you mentioned, he's sloppy. He's wild. There's really nothing pretty about it. I don't think if he can't get this fight to the floor, he is going to lose. I guarantee that. But I think he does get it to the floor. He's a solid wrestler with a very strong game from top position. Like, he's not stifling, but he can do some damage from top position, and he's aggressive from top position, looking to just beat you up and just soften you up to the point where you're giving up submissions. So while, again, I don't think Condair is that great overall, I think with the short notice and the fact that Song does way too easily wind up on his back, even though I don't expect Condair to set up takedowns well, just the fact that if he just gets a hold of Song, I think he can drag him to the floor and get top position. So I think that'll be enough. Even though Song is the better fighter, that doesn't mean he'll win. And that's why I'm picking Condair here, where the first true Indian fighter in the UFC will get a victory. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Kaelin Curran, who is 4-5, taking on Jan Zhaonan, who is 7-1 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Jumping Jan -130, the comeback on Curran at -110. Right now, looking over at five dimes, Jan -135, the comeback on Curran at +115. So it looks like two-way action coming into this fight. I mean, line margins have tightened up again. Nothing too crazy coming into this fight either. I mean, you have a girl making her UFC debut at 7-1, and you have a girl under 500 in Curran, and the girl, obviously, that has a better record outside of the UFC is coming in as a favorite. It all comes down to, I mean, Curran has just been such a letdown. I think she has all sorts of talent, all sorts of potential. She just can't define it. She can't put a complete game together and look good doing so. I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, because of the fact, like the Chambers fight, for example. I mean, I bet her against Alex Chambers, and that was obviously her second UFC fight at that time, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, after she lost to Van Zandt. So, you know, she had that fight. There's no question who was winning that fight. She was on her way to a clear-cut decision, and then she gets caught in an armbar. And I thought to myself, wow, what terrible fight IQ. And then after that, of course, she goes on and beats Kagan, but then she suffers, you know, back-to-back-to-back losses against decent competition as well. So Curran is just not there yet. I mean, again, she has the potential. She has the talent. I think she has, you know, with her looks and with her ability, she could be a popular UFC fighter, especially at 115 pounds. You know, if she keeps on growing as a fighter, she's only 26 years old. And obviously she's put herself in some decent positions, but at the same time, she's just not delivering. So I have no faith in her, and I have no faith in her game right now either. She just makes those bonehead mistakes. And I think Jan, I mean, again, she's a little relatively unknown. I mean, her resume overall, it's weak. I mean, as far as competition level goes, so she's fought all bums, but what you do see from her, I mean, she's a striking based fighter with some nastiness to her game. I mean, she loves to destroy people, has that killer instinct as well, has power, aggression, really no fear in most cases as well. And she kicks and punches well. So I think Jan on the feet is just one of those aggressive fighters that just brings it again against lower competition. But I think here it's a decent matchup for her because Curran on the feet does struggle at times. And I think Jan, her takedown defense will probably hold up okay here. Curran, that's the advantage that she will have over Jan, though, is on the ground. If Curran's smart, she's going to look to take this fight to the ground and test that ground game. Because again, with the level of competition that Jan's faced and her ground game being a little bit questionable, I mean, that's definitely an area where Curran can try to exploit. But I'm not that confident that she will do that. I mean, with all the mistakes that she's made in the past, and Jan is going to be prepared to probably stuff some takedowns along the way, because I'm sure she knows that this is, you know, Curran's best path to victory as well. So I don't know. I'm getting no confidence in this fight, no confidence, because I think Kern does have that advantage on the ground, but I just think that Jan, her nastiness and her striking game and just her aggression overall, she's going to come to fight to win, and I think she's probably going to get it done. So it's not a confident pick because, again, they're both so – I don't know. They're so weak in areas still that they need to develop, and I wish Jan's resume would be a little bit stronger and I would have a little bit more confidence in her. But still, despite all that, I have less confidence in Kern. So my pick is going to be Jan. I think she's going to show some pretty good striking on the feet, and it'll be impressive. If she keep off her back, she's going to get the W. So my pick is Jan to win.
And I agree. Kaylin Curran has had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity inside the octagon, and she just keeps coming up short. I mean, what's most frustrating is her last two opponents were not that good. You know, Alexandra Albu is very early in her career and was able to get the better of Curran over the first two rounds and hold on to win a decision after slowing down. And then Jamie Moyle, you know, not that impressive overall as a fighter either, but she was able to get takedowns. She was able to outstrike Curran. She was more active. And again, Curran just couldn't get things going. And in this fight, I can't, having to rely on Curran getting takedowns is not something that is something you should be optimistic about. You know, she does not have the greatest wrestling game. She has been able to get takedowns at times, but I think that's more from opponents gassing or opponents being completely out of position. Now, that being said, you know, Zhao Nin could get herself out of position. I mean, she's aggressive. She is a very exciting fighter to watch, especially with her stand-up. I mean, when she is getting things going, she can throw combinations, she kicks well, she punches well, she has a good diverse skill set on the feet. I think she can just light Curran up in the stand-up department. So if Curran wants to win this fight, she needs to close the distance in a hurry before she absorbs a lot of damage and then try to drag this fight either to the fence or to the canvas. And I'm just not confident in her wrestling or takedown game in general. And if she does get it to the floor, I'm not confident she can keep it there. So, that being said, it's possible. I mean, Zhao Nin could just be all hype, and hasn't really faced a lot of, talented fighters yet. So, there's plenty of possibility that, you know, she gets exposed on the ground by Curran, but on the feet, I do not think Curran can win this fight, and I think that's where most of it will take place, so I'm going to go Zhao Nin as well. I think that she either wins a decision or maybe she finishes Curran on the feet. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Song Keenan, who is 11-3, taking on Bobby Nash, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Nash -280, Song +200. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is currently Nash -320, Song at +260. So a lot of people, I'm sure, were maybe scratching their heads a little bit when Nash comes out as a 3-1 favorite, considering he's 0-2 in the UFC thus far. But it's a shame because Nash is better than an 0-2 fighter. I mean, he was performing relatively well in both those fights before he got knocked out. And that's a big issue for Nash, in my opinion. I mean, the guy has talent. You could tell the guy has a wrestling background. He's strong. He has some okay striking to go along with his wrestling and the grappling game too. So Nash is, I mean, one of these prototypical wrestling welterweights that can definitely find success in the UFC if it wasn't for his chin. That is what the problem is here with Nash, and it's going to continue to be the problem with Nash, I think, throughout his career, unfortunately, is that he could be doing really well. He could be hanging with some really talented fighters, and then bam, I mean, just one punch kick and sends him reeling, and that's it. I mean, people follow up, and they can finish him off. So he needs to tighten up that defense. I mean, you can't really fix a chin all that much, obviously, so he's got to tighten up that defense, try to avoid getting clipped. If he could do that, he's going to roll here against Song. I mean, another one of these guys that, you know, the resume is not very impressive with Song. I mean, he has a complete skill set, but again, he's one of these guys that's not really dominant anywhere. He's got some power on the feet. He works solid behind the lead jab, but he's pretty predictable. I mean, almost robotic at times with his striking. So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that Nash, again, I mean, if he lets some clip of me might go down. But other than that, I think that with the predictability, with the robotic striking, I think Nash should be able to kind of defend himself a little bit better in this case. Now, as far as Song goes, he does have a little bit of a ground game as well. He does have some speed with his double leg shot. I mean, it's usually after throwing some hands, he shoots in underneath and takes the fight to the ground. And he does have a pretty strong top game with submissions to go along with it. So he's not as hot off his back, of course. But which a lot of fighters are not, but I mean, that's exactly what, the plan is here is just to try to mix things up a little bit more and try to clip Nash's chin along the way. I don't think Song's going to have success getting Nash to the ground, but he will probably attempt to do so. So it's going to be interesting how this fight, goes overall. And I should make a quick note as well. Song is making his UFC debut coming off of, a body punch KO loss that he recently had. And then before that, he actually lost another fight as well. That's not on Sherdog, I believe, or one of these fights is not on Sherdog. So he's coming into this UFC debut off back to back losses that aren't exactly documented everywhere. Song is. So that's a bit of surprise. But that being said, again, he should be out of his league here. I mean, if he doesn't clip that chin of Nash, I just don't see how he wins. Cause again, I think Nash is going to be able to keep the fight upright. He's a better wrestler. I think he's just a better overall fighter. I mean, everywhere the fight takes place. So all comes down to that chin. And bottom line. So will I trust Nash's chin here? He's a solid favorite. He better get it done. I mean, again, he's better than what he showed so far in the UFC, and he deserves to be on the roster if he can, defend that chin. So the pick is Nash. I think he kind of rolls here, for the most part, at least.
There's not much more to be said about this fight. Keenan has a few knockouts to his credit, but he's not that good. So if Nash is going to beat anybody in the UFC, it's going to be this guy. I mean, I'm not impressed by Keenan whatsoever out of what I've seen. He's not as good of a striker as Nash. He's not as good of a wrestler at all by a landslide as Nash. He's not as strong as Nash. He doesn't have the reach of Nash. There's pretty much no category for anything that he's better than Nash, except maybe chin strength. So I'm not going to go rehash everything Nick said because I completely agree with everything Nick said about this fight. As long as Nash doesn't get knocked out, he should not only win, but probably dominate. So Bobby Nash is definitely my pick, and I think he should win in a landslide at this point. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Zabit Magomed Shapirov, who is 12-1. Taking on Shaman Moraes, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Magomed Shapirov, I open -315. The comeback on Moraes at +235. I have this line penciled in a little bit higher. At times, is one of those you can bounce back and forth on because I tell you what, Moraes is a pretty solid fighter. I know he lost. I mean, know Moraes for his loss against the other Moraes, Marlon Moraes, actually. And that was in World Series of Fighting. So outside of that, though, man, I'll tell you what. I mean, this Moraes, Shaman Moraes, has performed really well outside of that loss. I mean, he bounced back and ended up knocking out a very game Robbie Peralta. I know Peralta's not in the UFC anymore, but he also backed that up with a win over Palomino, which is impressive, I think. So Moraes is the type of fighter that, man, he has some power on the feet, and he's a dangerous opponent for a lot of people because of his power and his striking ability. I mean, the guy has a good ground game to go along with it as well. It's decent. It's solid, especially from top position. He's got some wrestling, too. So Moraes is a very, very good fighter that's probably getting a tad bit underestimated here, even against a guy like Magomed Shapirov here. I think that Moraes, especially if this fight stays standing, will have his moments, no doubt about it. I mean, and Magomed Shapirov has to be careful because, I mean, again, Moraes connects cleanly on anybody's chin. I think you can put him out. But let's shift gears a little bit over to Magomed Shapirov. Man, what a fun fighter he is to watch. And again, I'm not really surprised. I should mention, I guess I didn't mention yet, but the line got bet up for -315 for me. On my opener now, it's currently a -500. So needless to say, early action coming in on Magomed Shapirov. Nobody's hesitating to lay that 3-1. People are still putting him in parlays as well. So I'm sure we'll see the line continue to climb up, beyond this a little bit, but I mean, they just got to be careful because there is a path to victory for Moraes. I mean, even though Magomed Shapirov hasn't showed a bad chin, again, when you have an elite striker that can knock people out, you always got to be cautious. But that being said, Magomed Shapirov is one of these guys that, I mean, he has a very complete game. He's going to have some length over Moraes in this fight. He's going to be taller. He's going to actually have pure reach to go along with it. I believe 4 or 5 inches of reach. And then he knows how to use it as well. I think his stand-up game is very fun to watch because the guy, I mean, he doesn't look like the most, I don't know, I guess the most powerful striker at times, but he does have some pop behind his punches. So he does have a little bit of knockout power, and the way he mixes things up, and I mean, his diverse striking abilities is pretty fun to watch as well. But not just that, he's able to usually utilize his wrestling and his scrambling and his just his ground ability overall over his opponents. I mean, he had a very impressive win in, excuse me, in his last fight. And that was against Santiago, which I think is a very underrated fighter. I mean, obviously Santiago got an important and impressive win on Dana White's contender series, but he came into the UFC taking that fight on short notice and he got destroyed. So, I mean, that's how talented Magomed Sherpov is. I mean, he fought a very game guy like Santiago and made him look normal, really. I mean, not even normal. He made him look bad. So that's the talent for this guy. I mean, Magomed Sherpov can really make a run towards a title. He's got all the ability. He's got all the skill. He's got the training partners to go along with it, the camp. I mean, he's obviously trains with Edgar and crew up there in Jersey. So, I mean, yeah, he's definitely got all the makings to be a future title contender or possibly wear that strap. That's how good this guy is. So anywhere the fight takes place, Magomed Sherpov will be game, but I think he's got a bigger advantage on the ground here. And I think he probably goes to the ground at some point and gets Moraes on the ground. And then after that, it could be a wrap. So I'm going to pick obviously the huge favorite to win. And I think his role continues here, but again, would you bet it at 5-1? I'm sure a lot of you guys would. I would probably approach this fight with a little bit of caution, especially where the line is now, because Moraes, one punch could just change everything and be a huge parlay buster or a huge chalk buster. So got to be careful out there because you got to respect Moraes' game somewhat, even if he is facing a guy that stylistically shouldn't be a good matchup for him. Again, all it takes is one punch. So that's where my caution is as far as the betting window goes. But overall, I mean, I'm looking forward to what this guy does in the UFC. Magomed Sherpov is definitely a bright spot on this featherweight roster. And I mean, sky's the limit for him, really. So the pick is Magomed Sherpov.
Yeah, I agree that Magomed Sherpov has a big advantage in this fight on the ground, but I think he has a big advantage on the feet too. Yeah, Shaman Moraes is a talented striker and he's beat some UFC caliber fighters recently, but you gotta remember, he's a little small. I mean, this guy fought Marlon Moraes for the World Series of Fighting Bantamweight title at Bantamweight. So the fact that he is capable of fighting Bantamweight and he's facing perhaps the longest rangiest featherweight on the UFC roster, I think that just spells bad news for the stand-up department as well. I mean, Magomed Sharapov, he can be a little lackadaisical at times, but I mean, this guy is one of the more original and unique, devastating strikers in the division. And that's after just seeing him one time inside the octagon. I mean, he is fun to watch. He can do all kinds of diverse spinning attacks and crazy off the cage stuff. I would think like it's very Pettis-like at times if he wants to be. It's kind of got that lackadaisical Gegard Mousasi style where, you know, he's an amazing striker, but he doesn't look like he's trying. And then he can mix it up on the ground too. So I just really like this guy. I think that he has a ton of talent, a ton of potential, and you could definitely see him competing against the top in the division already. Now, I hope the UFC continues to give him kind of the slow burn as just let him build up and gain confidence. But, I mean, I think he has the talent right now to compete against top 15 fighters easily. So, Shaman Moraes, talented fighter. I think that he's a guy that can get wins inside the octagon, but this is a very tall task for your UFC debut. I just don't think this goes well for him. I think he gets outstruck. I think he gets outgrappled, and I think that he probably gets finished at some point by one of the better prospects in the UFC at this point. Now, moving on to the main card, we have Muslim Salikov making his UFC debut with a 12-1 record, and he's taking on Alex Garcia, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up at Salikov, minus 180, the comeback on Garcia, plus 140. Right now, looking over five times, it is Salikov, minus 220, the comeback on Garcia is at plus 180. So A little bit more action coming in Salikov's way. Nothing too crazy, though. I mean, some parlays again thrown in there as well. Line margins have tightened up a little bit as well. And I think that the action early on coming in his way is probably right. I mean, stylistically speaking, this probably is a nightmare matchup for Garcia, because you have a devastating striker in Salikov that's coming in and facing a guy that has a very suspect chin. I mean, that's one of Garcia's biggest issues, is obviously that chin. Cardio has been obviously a burden to him as well, but I think, you know, obviously when he starts getting tired, that chin is even worse. So, but that being said, I mean, Garcia overall has a pretty good skill set. We know that he's got some speed. He's got some power. He comes from a good camp. He's got some good wrestling and grappling to go along with it. So Garcia is not an easy out. It's just, again, he's a chinny fighter that often tends to gas along the way. Salikov hasn't really been tested, though, as far as – I mean, he's faced decent competition. So I'm not saying he's like a lot of these fighters that hasn't beat anybody. He actually has. But, I mean, he's pretty much destroyed everybody in the first round. I believe there's only one time that he's went out of the first, if I'm not mistaken. And he's coming off wins, we should note. I mean, he's, like I said, he's facing some decent competition outside of the UFC. Melvin Guillard, he beat him by knockout. It's a spin kick. You should check it out. It's a beautiful kick. And it's not really a fluke, because he did the same thing to Ivan George as well, the former UFC vet, with a spin kick. So this guy is that type of fighter. I mean, he moves well. He's got some really good striking. I mean, that's what he's known for. He's known for, I mean, his striking power and his unorthodox but technical skill set on the feet. I mean, with his spin kicks, I mean, with his precision, with his power. I mean, he's light on his feet. He's got good timing on all his entries, standing or takedowns. I mean, that's the other thing we got to consider too. He's not just, a complete striker. He is more well known for that, but he's also, the type of fighter that knows that he can get takedowns at times, and then he can beat you up on the ground as well. So he's a fun fighter to watch. There's no doubt about it. But there are some question marks in his game too. And one of them being off his back. I mean, we need to see him really get tested off his back. And Garcia should really try to implement that game plan. I mean, if he could get Salikov down and try to, mess around with him on the ground a little bit and see where he's at, in that area, that's where he's going to have a path to victory, I think, a little bit more so. But if this fight stays standing, even though Garcia does have some power, I think Salikov just destroys him on the feet as well. So, I'm going to pick Salikov. I agree with your reaction coming in. I think he is a bright spot and a nice addition to this welterweight roster, especially if he continues to develop that takedown defense and that ground game. I think he's going to be a threat to a lot of fighters at welterweight. So I like what I see in him, and I'm going to pick him to win. So the pick is Salikov to probably knock out Garcia.
And I'm a big fan of Muslim Salikov. This guy is, I believe, the only non-Chinese wushu champion in China. Or world champion. So that speaks volumes. Now, granted, wushu is not exactly a style that just screams UFC, but this guy hails from Russia. They were basically born being able to grapple and wrestle. Salikov is a very, very exciting fighter. I mean, this guy's kicking game is legit. And if he connects with anything like what he's been able to connect with recently against Alex Garcia, a fighter that does not have very good durability, a fighter that's, been rocked and hurt by Sean Spencer, I think Garcia could be in for a world of hurt. On the feet, Garcia has power, but he's not the most technical striker, and he's definitely been lit up by people that just knew how to throw a good jab. So if Salikov can really get going on the feet, I think it'll be a very short night for Alex Garcia. That being said, Salikov could be exposed if Garcia is able to get takedowns. Garcia does have a pretty strong wrestling game. He's used his wrestling offensively repeatedly in fights. There have been multiple instances where Garcia was in a matchup where it was going to be competitive on the feet, or maybe he was even going to lose it on the feet, but he repeatedly got takedowns, and that helped him out immensely. Like, the Mike Swick fight is a very good example of that one. So basically, if, Garcia can get the wrestling game going, he might expose Salikov, because I just don't know enough about Salikov's ground game. And, that's a huge question mark in this fight. But that being said, I mean, Salikov is a guy that is just so interesting that, and with every fight starting on the feet to begin each round, there's always going to be a good shot for him to land something. Even if Garcia is going to play like kind of the lay and pray attack style, which I think would be the most effective method for him to try to get a win. But that being said, I still think Salikov, as nasty as he is on the feet, might be able to sneak something through. So my pick is going to be Salikov, especially if he can make Garcia work for takedowns and tire him out a little bit. I think that'll really open up the knockout opportunity. And I think at some point he probably knocks Garcia out. So Salikov is going to be my pick. But just be careful out there with how big of a favorite he is. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Wang Guan, who is 16-1-1, taking on Alex Caceres, who is 13-10 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up at Caceres, minus 165. The comeback on Guan at plus 125. Right now, looking over five times, Caceres minus 150. Guan is at plus 130. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action is coming into this fight. Not an easy line to set. I mean, you have a guy that's looking to make his debut in the UFC that's actually a pretty decent fighter. I mean, again, you want to talk about level of competition being a little bit weak, but it's not as good as I'd like, but it's actually decent. I mean, he's got a few okay names on his resume. So it's not like, again, some of the earlier fighters on the podcast that we were talking about. And Guan overall is a striking based fighter that really has a complete MMA game to go along with it, meaning that he's got decent takedown defense, good ground awareness, and capable of getting top position and dropping some ground and pound when he's on the ground as well from to the top. So still needs more work, though, as far as his wrestling goes and his grinding style, so he could be able to, you know, to deal with some of these grinders along the way. But overall, I mean, he's one of these guys that's a striker that has power, that's, again, got a clean technique on the feet, that if he connects, man, he could do some damage. So he does have a path to victory here as well, because Caceres, as many of us know, I mean, one of his biggest flaws is his chin. I mean, I know he's officially only been knocked out once, but man, I mean, some of those sub losses that he has, he's been knocked out and then subbed as well. So he gets rocked. I mean, there's no question about that. But as far as competition level and where he's at in his career, Caceres is definitely ahead of the game here, because I mean, he's faced a really good competition. He's, you know, performed really, if he hasn't beat solid comp in the UFC, he's at least performed well in most cases against him as well. So this for Guan, for Caceres, is not really going to be, you know, anything that he hasn't seen before. I mean, I know that Guan isn't necessarily a small guy at featherweight and he does pack a punch, but again, Caceres has been in there with so many good fighters that I think he can adapt. And right now, I mean, he is definitely a confident fighter overall, because he knows he can compete and stand and bang with fighters. He can get the fight to the ground. And then once on the ground, Caceres actually has some little bit underrated wrestling. And then his jiu-jitsu ability is pretty fun to watch as well. Now his sub defense again has to improve a little bit, but it's not as bad as his record in case. Again, I think some of those basically are because he's been getting rocked before he gets submitted or whatnot as well. But his sub defense has actually improved, and he doesn't really have to worry about that too much with Guan here. So what Caceres does have to worry about is Guan's striking ability, his power. So this is a tough one for me. I almost think that Guan is going to be able to keep this fight upright. And if he does, I think he's going to be a little bit too strong and maybe catch that chin of Caceres here. But it's hard to pick against Caceres, especially in a fight like this where he is the better mixed martial artist. And I think he does have a path to victory over Guan, which could be on the scorecards or could be on the ground here. I think if Caceres gets Guan's back or something like that, he can obviously get the W that way as well. So another spot where, man, it's a tricky fight. I mean, you would think, again, Caceres should be better, but they're a bigger favorite, but he's not for a reason. I think Guan is definitely a test, even, you know, despite where Caceres is in his UFC career right now. So that being said, I'm going to slightly lean towards Caceres, but this could very well be a dog or pass situation. I mean, I think this is realistically a spot where Caceres could have a letdown and Guan actually knock him out and then puts himself in a good spot on the radar in the UFC featherweight division. So we'll see how it plays out. Should be a fun fight, though, at least. I know that. I mean, both these guys come to fight, so I don't think we'll be in for a boring scrap here. But the pick is Caceres to get the job done. Just not a very confident pick.
Guan is talented, for sure, but similarly to a lot of the Chinese fighters on this card, he doesn't have a lot of competition against top names. That being said, I do think he is a little further up the food chain in terms of experience and ability than several of his counterparts on the preliminary card. I mean, they're putting him on the main card against an experienced veteran for a reason. I think that's because they have some faith in him. I think Guan definitely has power, and he's a pretty solid striker. So if he can connect with Alex Caceres, there's a chance he could win for sure, because Caceres is a little bit chinny. He's been hurt repeatedly in fights on the feet. So if there's a path to victory for him, it's clearly knocking Caceres out. I mean, Guan has zero submissions, so I highly doubt that that's going to happen, especially against somebody that knows what they're doing on the canvas, like Caceres. And but he does have most of his wins by knockout. I mean, I think about 12 out of his 16 victories are by knockout. So if Caceres is going to lose, it's probably going to be in that fashion. So Caceres, that being said, is a pretty solid striker. I mean, this guy can go toe-to-toe with some talented fighters on the feet. I mean, he rocked Sergio Pettis and set up his victory against Pettis with his stand-up. He went toe-to-toe with Yair Rodriguez on the feet for 5 rounds. So Caceres is no slouch in the stand-up department. He has a good jab. He has good length on the feet. He clearly knows what he's doing, and he can mix it up pretty well. So I wouldn't be shocked, even though I would be a little surprised if it did happen, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Caceres win a technical stand-up battle. But if Caceres really wants to get the victory, I think the smartest thing to do is to close the distance and try to get this fight to the floor, because Guan is a bit untested on the canvas. He's clearly dangerous on the feet. He's dangerous from top position if he can get it on the ground. But Caceres, I think, is way nastier with submission ability, with his sweeps, with pretty much anything that he can pull off because of his long limbs. I think that he could wrap Guan up in something and force him to tap out at some point. So why risk it? You know, Guan is a dangerous, powerful striker, but he's not dangerous if you can get him on the floor. So if Caceres can do it, I'd say go for it. Like, and he's pretty effective, Caceres is, at getting takedowns when he wants to. And I think that this is definitely a situation where he should want to. So my pick is going to be Caceres, but don't count Guan out if this fight does stay standing, because this guy does have the ability to knock Caceres out. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Li Jinglong, who is 13-4, taking on Zach Otto, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Jinglong -170, the comeback on Otto at +130. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, Jinglong -185, the comeback on Otto at +160. So a little bit more action coming in Jinglong's way. Again, line margins have tightened up. And it's staying under 2-1, so nothing crazy. And I think that's probably an accurate lead into this fight, meaning that it will be a competitive fight. I mean, Otto is a split decision machine. I mean, anytime the fight goes to the scorecards with this guy, win or lose, it seems like he's involved in a close, close-ass fight, especially in the UFC thus far. So I think this is going to be the case here again. I mean, Jinglong has definitely, I think, the advantage over Otto, especially on the feet a little bit. I think what we're seeing from Jinglong striking overall, I mean, he definitely has a good wrestling game. He's a complete fighter. It's not, you know, that he's lacking in any area at all. In fact, I mean, he's been one of the most impressive fighters, in my opinion, to come out of that region. So, I mean, Jinglong is definitely a success, you know, from China, that he's, you know, one of the better, I guess, more successful fighters is what I'm trying to spread out so far on a UFC roster. And, you know, he's the type of guy at age 29, still has room to grow a little bit and get better and more confidence. A win over Otto will probably do that for him as well, because Otto is no slouch. Again, I mean, Otto's a pretty strong guy. He's faced decent competition thus far as well. Like I said, I mean, in the UFC, he's been involved in really close competitive bouts. Otto is the type of guy that has a wrestling background, but has some striking to go along with it, has some power on the feet. And so he's no slouch there. And then if he can get the fight to the ground on the ground, he does have a good submission game and good top control and some good ground to pound to go along with it too. So he's able to utilize more times than not his ground game to get the victories. Not so much again in the UFC, but outside of the UFC at least. So Jinglong is going to be in for a tough test. I think this fight probably will stay up on the feet for the most part, because both these guys have decent takedown defense. If anybody gets put on their back, I think it's Jinglong. I think Otto will probably look for that takedown, and maybe he gets it and is successful with that. So that's what makes this fight intriguing, because it's a 3-round fight. And if it's a close fight on the feet, with Jinglong probably edging out the rounds on the feet and Otto maybe stealing a takedown or two along the way, who knows? I mean, this has another split decision, in my opinion, written all over it. So it's going to be competitive. A lot of people are going to disagree with it, because I think a lot of people are going to be on Jinglong and thinking that it's an easy win for him. But it really is not. I mean, again, I think Otto at times fights up to the level of competition. So I think he's going to hang in here with Jinglong and actually put on a pretty good fight. So that all being said, I still think Jinglong is the better fighter. I think he is the better, more diverse striker. And I think that, you know, I mean, if he could keep off his back, he probably does edge out Otto on the scorecards. It's going to be hard for Jinglong to stop Otto. He has shown some punching power in the UFC so far as well. And he has the ability to finish fights, no doubt about that. But I still think Otto's tough enough that he probably doesn't get clipped on the feet and survive. So I'm expecting a split decision type of fight. But I do favor Jinglong to probably edge out the scorecards here as well. So the pick is Jinglong. But again, I mean, it seems to be a trend here. I'm not the most confident because I think Otto with the split decision a prowess alone, I mean, and the way judging is these days, even if Jinglong wins all three rounds, we can see Otto winning a clear unanimous decision. You never know. So that's where you got to be cautioned here. I think both these guys are tough enough to withstand each other's aggression and, you know, ability on the feet. So it probably does hit the scorecards. And if it does, I think Jinglong kind of edges it out there. So the pick is Jinglong to win, but another spot where it's going to be tough.
I favor Jinglong as well, but yeah, this is definitely not a cakewalk fight. Zach Otto is a well-rounded, seasoned competitor. I mean, this guy has a good wrestling game. He's competent on the feet. He has a pretty good chin. He's pretty good defensively. So Jinglong isn't just going to be able to steamroll through and knock him out. At least I don't think so. I mean, he could surprise me. But I would say Jinglong has been one of the more improved fighters since his UFC debut. I mean, when we first saw him, he was just hanging on to fighters, dragging them to the floor, relying on being one of the bigger welterweights. And now he's mixing things up. He's standing and trading. He's knocking people out violently in fights. He's winning striking battles. And then he's grappling when he needs to. And at times he's more using his grappling defensively to keep fights standing because he enjoys striking so much. And he's not a bad striker. He's actually a pretty entertaining striker. So I have to give major props to Li Jinglong for the improvements he's made. Now, Zach Otto, I would say that he's a capable striker and he could clearly hold his own with Li Jinglong on the feet, but I think Jinglong is more aggressive. I think Jinglong is more powerful. I would say Otto has a little bit more durability than Jinglong. We've seen Li Jinglong get hurt a little bit on the feet at times, but I think that's more because he's just so much more willing to engage and take risks. And that's not Otto. When Otto lost that fight to Moraes, I mean, that was not a good performance. I mean, he only went to the ground the one time and it was a split decision, but I mean, it was an ugly split decision. It really wasn't a very good performance. And honestly, Otto has gone to split decision in all three of his fights. So, I mean, if he wants to get a win here against the best Chinese fighter in the world, in my opinion, in China, I think Otto is going to have to take a few more risks and be a little bit more aggressive. Jinglong is just a guy that is going to not stop pushing forward and getting in his face and throwing heavy shots. Otto, if he wants to win this fight, I think he needs to get top position with takedowns. I think he needs to engage a little bit more on the feet, like try to knock Jinglong out. I mean, Jinglong is going to leave himself exposed at times. He's going to create openings. Otto needs to take advantage of those. And I'm just not quite convinced that he will. So there is path to victory for Otto. I think it's through top position. I think it's through taking over as Jinglong maybe starts to fade a little bit, because I do see Jinglong slowing down in fights because he's so aggressive and expends so much energy early. And I think he's going to be extra fired up fighting in Shanghai. So there's definitely a path to victory for Otto, but I'm just not quite convinced he's got the confidence or willingness to take that path to victory. So I'm going to side with Li Jinglong. I think he can win a decision. He might even win by knockout if he can really crack Otto on the feet. So my pick is going to be Jinglong. Now, moving up to the middleweight division for the main event of the evening, we have the former UFC middleweight champion Michael Bisping, who is 31-8, stepping in on short notice to take on Kelvin Gastelum, who is 14-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Gastelum, -230, the comeback on Bisping at +170. Right now, it's actually Gastelum -300, the comeback on Bisping at +250. So most people are thinking along the same line as I am as well. I do think Gastelum is a bad stylistic matchup for Bisping, especially coming off the beating that he just took a few weeks back against GSP. Now, that being said, it was a little bit of a surprise because GSP did have a little bit more success than we all thought on the feet against Bisping. And then GSP was also able to have some success with his wrestling, which we weren't quite sure because Bisping's been, you know, a pretty hard guy to take down throughout his career. I know that he has been put on his back in the past, but his takedown defense has gotten better and it's gotten to the point where it's really tough for these wrestlers to get Bisping down. So, I mean, that part of his game, we just weren't sure how it was going to play out. Most of us thought Bisping would be able to keep the fight upright and outstrike GSP. Didn't happen. I mean, GSP, he had his moments. Don't get me wrong. Bisping was actually looking good at times in that fight, but overall, I don't know. I just wasn't pleased with Bisping. He looked a little off to me. I mean, the striking that GSP had, the success that he had on the feet against Bisping was a bit more surprising to me than I expected a little bit. And then, of course, he was able to blast Bisping and then choke him out. So a few weeks later, I get it. I mean, when you're at the point in your career, especially where Bisping is, when he is one of the best middleweights of all time, again, you guys can argue it, love it, hate it, do what you want with it, but it's true. I mean, the guy, look at his resume. I mean, he has been putting in the work. He's been relevant in the UFC middleweight division for a long, long time. So he is one of the best middleweight fighters. And when you get to that point and you suffer a loss, a bad beat like you did against GSP, even though it's to a worthy opponent, you still don't want the public or you don't want that mark against you just staying there. So you want to remove it as fast as you can. So that's why Bisping wants to turn around and get back in on the horse here and get back in there against Gaslam and pick up a solid win because he wants to just erase that loss that he just had to GSP, title shot or not. I mean, it has nothing to do with it. I think just for his own mental wellness, he wants to just erase that loss. So with all that being said, it's going to be hard though. I get it. It's just too soon, I think, for him because even though he didn't get officially knocked out in that fight against GSP, he did take some damage. And Gaslam is a type of fighter. I mean, if you look what he did to Weidman either, I was on Weidman against Gaslam. I thought Weidman would beat him, and I was right. But that was scary at times, man. Gaslam packs a punch, and he was able to wobble Weidman. So I think Weidman has pretty much a better chin than Bisping overall. And, I mean, if he's able to do that kind of damage to Weidman, I think he can. Obviously, an aging Bisping that's 38 years old that's always had somewhat of a suspect chin and stepping in on this fight on short notice, even though it wasn't long ago that he was in really good shape. So I don't think it's his shape. He's not going to be out of shape for this fight for Bisping. I think it's more so his chin and his age that's going to get him beating this fight. So maybe I'm miscounting his chance a little bit. I think that I'm underestimating Bisping here against Gaslam, but I don't know, man. I think it's going to be a pretty close striking matchup. I know Bisping can have some success on the feet against Gaslam, but I think what it's going to come down to is Gaslam just landing that big punch. And again, Bisping being damaged or hurt by it, and maybe Gaslam stepping in and finishing the fight, maybe by sub, maybe by ground and pound. I'm not sure, but I do think Gaslam is just too much too soon for Bisping at this point. And I can't believe I'm saying that because Gaslam, I think, in my opinion, is undersized in the middleweight division. But that being said, I think this is a winnable fight for him here. And I think, again, Bisping is making a mistake taking this fight on short notice, stepping in this spot. But we'll see how it goes. I do think Gaslam is just, I mean, with everything he's got going for him right now, I mean, he's going to want to rebound, obviously, from that Weidman loss. But, I mean, he was looking good at middleweight before that time. And with his wrestling, with his knockout power, stylistically, this is just a tough matchup for Bisping. Even if he can fend off the takedown attempts that Gaslam throws at him, I think he's not going to be able to fend off that big punch that he gets landed on. So I don't know. It is what it is. I don't have much confidence in Bisping right now. The pick is Gaslam. I think he does probably finish Bisping along the way.
Michael Bisping is almost retired. He said that he was hoping that next year in a UFC event in England that he was going to be calling it a career. So he is one fight away from being done. And I think it's a really great thing that he was able to step in when Anderson Silva got removed from the fight for steroids or not passing USADA test or whatever. But that being said, I think this is a really tough matchup for him. Bisping, in my opinion, is probably the seventh or maybe eighth best middleweight on the roster. And I had him ranked about the sixth or seventh best middleweight on the roster when he was champion. Everybody else, you usually have him first or second. But, Bisping, I thought it was a bit of a lucky punch that he landed against Luke Rockhold. And then they had him defend the title against Dan Henderson, who immediately retired after that. And then when he finally fought somebody, again, GSP, who hadn't fought in 4 years and he was moving up a weight class, he still lost. So, Bisping, I hate to say it because he's been like such a stalwart for the division and he's been a great thing for the UFC, but he was a paper champion. And, I think Kelvin Gastelum is definitely in a better spot at this point in his career. I mean, Gastelum is quicker. He's got more power. He doesn't have as much conditioning. I think if Bisping has any chance to win this fight, it's more by the death by a thousand cuts strategy, where you just wear them down slowly and surely and just try to take over as the fight goes on. And I'm not a huge fan of the fact that Gastelum is, or that Bisping is taking this fight so quickly after getting hurt badly on the feet by GSP and losing his title. I mean, that was like a month ago, not even. So, Bisping is having a very quick turnaround, and then he's facing a guy that, in my opinion, is even more dangerous striker on the feet. Now, Gastelum is a little bit more vulnerable on the feet too. He's been knocked down by Rick Story at welterweight. He got knocked down by Chris Weidman in his last fight before he ended up getting submitted. So there's definitely some possibilities here for Bisping to make something happen. But I'm not a huge fan of how quick this turnaround was after he lost his belt. It more seems like he has something to prove than anything. So, or maybe it's just that he has nothing to lose at this point because he knows that he's not going to be fighting much longer. So, Michael Bisping, he's active. He, has some talented striking ability, but I just think Gastelum is going to be quicker to the punch. And I think with how the fact that Bisping can get hurt so easily on the feet, there's going to be a really good chance that Kelvin Gastelum lands something nasty on him early and puts him away. If this fight goes long, if it goes deep, there's a chance that Bisping could take over. And he might just get the better of Gastelum at points in this fight. I mean, Bisping does have a 4-inch reach advantage. He's clearly the bigger fighter. I mean, Gastelum is capable of fighting at welterweight. He just isn't capable of making welterweight. So, if Bisping's going to win, it's going to be by wearing Gastelum down and using that size and reach, to his advantage over extended periods of time and making Gastelum have to work for everything he gets. But I'm just not quite convinced that he'll be able to do that, especially on such a quick turnaround after losing his belt. So my pick is going to be Kelvin Gastelum. I think he probably finishes Michael Bisping in the first or second round. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 122. Now, our premium bets for the event will be released on Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.